Hello and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, Ben Golliver. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. I'm over here looking at this rundown of the show today, and another exercise in complete depravity from you. Okay, you want us to talk about Jimmy Butler, what's up next in Minnesota, and Carmelo Anthony. I can't imagine a more dreary trio of topics. So I wanted to bring some light into your world to let you and the Open Floor Globe realize that it's not all just negativity and drama in the NBA. Because, Andrew, I celebrated a holiday on Saturday, also known as Happy Giannis Day. It was the first time I had seen Giannis in person in LA. He played against the Clippers in a phenomenal regular season game. You know, the Bucks media was grumbling about how some of the players looked like maybe the LA nightlife got to them. Whatever. Incredible fun game. It went down to the buzzer overtime, and Lou Williams hit a game winner. But I'm here to make a grand declaration, Andrew, and I've thought about it here for the last 48 hours because I got to watch Giannis in person. You know, I kind of examined him and the Bucks' mindset after that game, which was a kind of a close loss, and how they took it. I am ready to declare that Giannis is my favorite player to watch in person of my entire life besides Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan's one, Giannis is two. It was very close between Giannis and Steph because he's an incredibly entertaining player to watch, obviously, and he's built up that entire show in Golden State. The crowd there is amazing. But in terms of just pure delight, surprise, he's doing left to right Euro steps, right to left Euro steps, left-handed dunk off the wrong foot Euro steps, right-handed dunk off the wrong foot Euro steps. He expends so much energy defensively. He's really, really improved his feel and his basketball intelligence on both ends, but especially defensively. The guy just has me gawking. And I just want to say, like, I often go on my high horse and say, like, let's respect greatness. Let's appreciate greatness. Let's not take it for granted. That's my message today, Andrew. Everyone across the world, but especially the Bucks beat writers, we need to really appreciate what Giannis is doing. I don't know if it ends with an MVP, but this guy is truly, truly special. And just, you know, being in his aura, it gave me goosebumps, like, you know, watching LeBron back in like 2007, 2008 did. I mean, this guy is in a different place right now.
Wow. Well, okay. I do want to take a second to apologize to any listeners of the podcast who are not Bucks fans, because I feel like at this point, and it's a credit to how well Milwaukee is playing and how well Giannis is playing, we go on one of these little Giannis digressions at least once every two episodes at this point. And you're not wrong. The other thing that I enjoyed, because I got some on-scene reporting from you, number one, Giannis was despondent after the game, a close loss in overtime, which you said was a credit to his greatness. And I agree with that. You know, taking a November loss to the Clippers harder than he should, but that's why he's going to be great. And then the other thing is, Giannis is truly a man after your own heart, and was talking trash about people texting him from a phone that isn't an iPhone, and said he only wants to see blue bubbles. That's what he said, right?
Exactly. So I've got three takeaways from the post-game scenario. First takeaway is what you mentioned. I mean, this guy's got his feet in a huge bucket of ice. He's not talking to anyone. He's staring into space for like 20 minutes after a loss, you know, to the Clippers. Now, look, that's a championship response to some random game in November. I mean, this loss really didn't matter that much. And you look at what they did the very next night in Denver, picking up a road win in a tough place. The Bucks mean business. And Andrew, it's not just Giannis, it's everybody. Even their PR guy was just like, man, I can't believe we dropped that. He was like pissed off, like his day was ruined. I've seen a lot of Milwaukee Bucks teams come through town over the last decade. I can't tell you a single one of those teams that would have gotten that upset about a loss to a pretty good team in the Clippers this early in the season. These guys are on a mission. I love it. And I think, you know, we're going to talk a lot about, oh, Philly, how great are they going to be? And of course, the Raptors fans never stop talking. Don't forget about Milwaukee. These guys are going to be very legit in this year's playoffs. That was takeaway number one. Takeaway number two, you already spoiled it, but that's completely fine. Giannis is a hashtag blue bubble gang, all right? He only likes to mess with people who are texting with iPhones. So that Android
blue
stuff,
bubble gang,
that Android
yeah.
stuff, the Google phone, whatever else it is, if you're not on iMessage, Giannis doesn't want to see it. I thought that was hilarious. And the
Yes, and also for people who don't know, Ben, I don't know if there's a word for it. Whatever the equivalent of a sneakerhead is for Apple products, that's what Ben Golliver is. And you know, every time there's a new, God only knows how much money you have funneled to Tim Cook and Apple over the last 5 years, because all this shit is getting way more expensive. But every time there's a new product drop, you're there on day one shelling out a grand for whatever the new iPhone is. So
I'm not proud of it, but it is a lifelong problem. I'm working through it with the help of therapy. My third point and takeaway is this. He was gifted a free LAFC soccer jersey. It was actually personalized with his name and number on the back, and it actually looked like it was going to fit him. So whoever did that gifting, like, five stars. Like, where do you even begin? Like, what size does Giannis wear? How many X's, right? Like, 6, 7? I mean, the guy is an absolute animal at this point. But I talked to him very briefly afterwards about his potential soccer career, because I thought maybe he'd be a striker, right? Like, you just use his leaping ability, his coordination, you know, get a lot of headers on goal. Giannis says no, he's a midfielder, Andrew. And that got me thinking, because we've done this before. Which NBA guys could play soccer? Like, Kyrie always comes up because he'd have incredible moves and so on and so forth. Can you imagine being like a 5'5" British midfielder and the guy you're marking for 90 minutes is Giannis? And like, you're trying to take the ball off Giannis? That would be awful. But he would also be a really good goalkeeper. And some people in my Instagram comments at ben.golliver on Instagram mentioned that as well.
The Instagram plug.
Imagine if he was a goalkeeper too. I mean, his ability to cross sports here, because we used to always say LeBron could play football, right? Giannis, as a soccer player, he could play 11 positions.
Well, here's the thing. I don't think he could play 11 positions. I do think, and this comes up anytime there's a big soccer event, like every 4 years with the World Cup, people start talking about which NBA guys could play soccer. I do think you could probably take 30 or 40 guys from the NBA and turn them into world-class goalkeepers, and Giannis is certainly at the head of that class. Like, there's no way. I mean, he's just a freak of nature. Of course he could be a great goalie. And in general, the soccer snobs usually kind of butt into that conversation and start saying, like, just because a guy's athletic, like, Russell Westbrook wouldn't necessarily be a world-class striker. You have to train for your entire lives. You Americans don't even understand the skills. All of which is probably true. But I do believe in my heart that Allen Iverson could have been, like, one of the greatest soccer players of all time had he played. And Iverson would have been good at literally any sport he played. He was a great football player, too. So that's number one. And I also will go to my grave convinced that LeBron James could have been a Hall of Fame NFL tight end. Despite all the people who want to be too cool for school and say, oh no, you guys are so stupid. It takes more than what you can possibly imagine to be great in the NFL or great soccer players. Iverson would have been awesome as a crossover athlete, and so would LeBron.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you mentioned Iverson, because on my list of most entertaining players of all time, Iverson's way up there, at least of guys that I've seen him in person especially. Like, Iverson's really close to the top of that list. But
yeah, it's funny, because you were talking about it with Giannis, and I was thinking about it in my head, who would be on my top five, and Iverson was the first name I thought of, in part because you kind of had to see him in person to appreciate, number one, just how small he was, and number two, just how much faster he was than anyone on the court. And watching him kind of exist in that NBA world and then just take over games and dominate was a one-of-one experience.
No question. And I agree with you on the crossover abilities of both him and LeBron. I also think, though, Giannis could really play soccer, because remember last week we were struggling to what's our comp for Zion Williamson, right? And like, we're digging back into like the 80s crates to like come up with like Charles Barkley. What's the soccer comp for Giannis? He's bigger than any player in soccer history. He's got a better combination of strength, size, motor than any player in soccer history. So yeah, like, okay, soccer fans could say, all right, well, you know, he would need to train and do these things. Of course he would, but he would be a game-changing presence on the quote-unquote pitch from day one.
So here's the problem, and now we're well past the point of parity, starting off with 10 minutes on Giannis and whether he could dominate soccer on our Jimmy Butler trade podcast. But I think from what I've gathered in talking to friends who are kind of diehard soccer fans, a low center of gravity helps a lot in soccer, and that would be an issue for Giannis. And so that's why some of these guys who are 6'8 and above, I don't know if, I mean, there aren't many soccer players who play like that. So I'm not totally sold on Giannis as anything more than a goalkeeper, but I like where your head's at.
He would be the greatest header in soccer history, and I think he would be an elite goaltender. Probably could go through the entire World Cup not giving up a single goal. Imagine staring him down on a penalty kick. What are the odds you're going to score that, Andrew? It's a lower odds than you dribbling past Patty Mills to get up the court. I mean, very, very low.
And whether he's a world-class footballer or not, he is a member of the hashtag Blue Bubble Gang. And that's really all that matters.
It really is. Hey, and we should transition out of this. But the reason why I wanted to start here, in all seriousness, is because, you know, you sounded very sick and tired of the Jimmy Butler saga last week. I hit my breaking point probably 3 weeks ago, and I think a lot of our listeners did too. And I think now that it's done, we can kind of look back on it and say, like, you know what? What he did in Minnesota play down to like the absolute worst stereotypes that people have of NBA players. Oh, they're entitled, they're rich, they only play when they want, there's, you know, they're going to force their way out of town, and all these things that in general to me not really that representative of how the NBA is. But yeah, it's almost like Jimmy realized that his best way to ensure he would be out is to just lean into all of those things for like 2 months and then just reset his career after it was over. And my only point here with Giannis is it's a beautiful honeymoon period. It's the exact opposite of everything that's going on in Minnesota these last 2 months. Their team is clicking on the court. It doesn't seem to be a lot of egos in that locker room. The coaching style changes are going well, and they're on the upswing, and it doesn't last forever. You know, Milwaukee could be in a very different position 2 years from now once the free agency stuff starts bubbling and everything else. So I just think all of us, and I include myself in this, let's not take this for granted. They're a really, really fun team right now, led by an incredible player who has got his mind solely focused on basketball, and it's great to see. Now we can proceed with an hour of depravity that you've got lined up for us.
You know what, though? Your point is well taken, and that's part of why I have enjoyed the past few years of Giannis so much, because he is in that honeymoon phase, and things start to change. You know, it happens to every superstar where the story sort of takes twists and turns along the way, but we should appreciate this Bucks season while it's here. And with that, let's move to this Sixers season, Ben, because boy, oh boy, I am excited to see where this leads.
You're only excited because you don't think it's going to work, right? I mean, that's why you're excited, because you want it to flame out and explode, and then all the process guys look bad. I mean, isn't that why you're excited about this?
No, I really don't know how it's going to work. But I think big picture, when you look at the teams that were pursuing Jimmy Butler, I think putting him in the East on the Sixers is a lot more fun than putting him in Houston so that he can go lose to the Rockets in 5 or 6 games. And beyond that, there weren't many alternatives that were going to be much more entertaining for the league as a whole than throwing him on that Sixers team and seeing what they can do in the East. And so I'm pumped. But like you said, there's also potential for a spectacular disaster here. So we'll start with this question from Rajko, who says, now that Jimmy Butler has finally gotten his wish and was traded to the Sixers, do you think he's actually happy about it? He now goes to a team where one young star has been seen eating cheeseburgers right before tip-off, and the other has not even attempted to work on his jump shot. Do you think he'll end up just as upset with his new young teammates as he was with his old ones? So, Ben, I'll hand the floor to you here, cede the floor to you, whatever you do with the open floor. But my question at the top, in addition to what Rajko is asking, is do you see this working for the Sixers?
I am very cautiously like half optimistic about this. I think there's a real chance that it just doesn't work at all, especially offensively. the main issue that I see is the ball in Ben's hands or Jimmy's hands, right? Jimmy loves to have the ball. He is accustomed to having the ball. He basically forced Derek off the ball in Chicago, and he completely marginalized Wiggins in Minnesota by needing the ball. You can't play Ben Simmons off the ball. You really can't do that for long stretches because he's such a poor shooter, as you've pointed out over and over again and fought him over. He needs to be the guy with the basketball. He needs to be the lead playmaker. If you move him off the ball, he's not doing what he does best, which is orchestrate the offense, attack downhill, get to the rim, set up his teammates for three-pointers and so forth. And he is stuck doing what he's worst at, which is trying to space the court in any way possible. So to me, that is a real tension, and I'm not sure how you work around that. I mean, I think ultimately you're going to have to stagger those guys basically completely, so you've always got one on the court, you know, Jimmy and Ben. But it's not like Embiid is a low-usage center, and Embiid views himself as the leader and the franchise guy there, so he's going to want to be eating first, too. I think that's a secondary tension point between him and Jimmy in terms of, okay, you know, who's going to be the alpha guy in this locker room? And we've seen, you know, Jimmy just seeks out those kinds of conflicts, and Embiid has not really dealt with anyone in his basketball career who's like that. So those are two big issues. I think defensively, you know, obviously it should work pretty well. I mean, this should be a top three defense once they're all up to speed. I mean, you've got three elite guys in your core trio from a defensive standpoint, and that's going to be a very clear identity. But to me, I guess the question, it's similar to kind of the questions that I had with Oklahoma City last year is, you know, can your offensive individual stars produce a whole that's greater than the sum of the parts? And I remain skeptical that that can happen. And I'm very curious to see how those individual guys react if it doesn't. Because I'll be frank, if I was Ben Simmons or if I was on team Ben Simmons, if it didn't work this year, like, I would have an open mind right now. I'd say, let's go see. Right. You know, it's going to be hard to get another star. Let's see if it works. But let's say it doesn't work this year. If I was Ben Simmons, I'd be thinking real hard next summer about trying to just hit the eject button and say, like, look, I didn't tell you guys to go trade for Jimmy. I want to have my own team. I was already kind of trying to make it work with Joel, and there was, you know, talk about whose team is it here. Maybe just trade me somewhere where I can be the guy.
Yeah, you know, and if I were a betting man, I would need long odds because, look, it's a long shot that Ben Simmons isn't in Philly next year. But, you know, that scenario is probably more plausible than Sixers fans might think right now. And in part because Team Ben could sort of speed that process along. But in part because, look, if this doesn't work, Simmons has a ton of value. And I could certainly see Embiid and Jimmy Butler kind of urging the team to consider other options too. And so all of that is part of why the next 6 months in Philly are going to be so fascinating, because there's a lot of potential for downside here. I do want to talk about the Jimmy side of this, because a lot of people have been talking about his intangibles and the chemistry problems that he'll create. And this question from Rajgo is talking about, you know, do you think he'll be just as upset with his new young teammates as he was with his old ones? I just think, you know, I saw on your Instagram over the weekend you called his behavior despicable in Minnesota. And
it,
I think that
it was.
Okay. I understand that he didn't handle the situation as well as many of us would have liked. But big picture, when you look at Jimmy Butler's career, you know, he had to go back to the Chicago Bulls when he was a free agent, I guess 4 or 5 years ago, because he was a restricted free agent. He did not have the freedom to really leave. Then he was traded to Minnesota, and then Minnesota's young guys weren't great, you know? And when Jimmy's criticizing Towns and Wiggins, he's not really wrong.
No, he's 100% right. I mean, he's right on the merits, but completely, horrifically, despicably wrong in his method. That's where I'm coming from. Like, look, I agree with every single one of his takes. Like, you know, he knew he had Tibbs by the you-know-whats because he mortgaged the whole team for him, right? He had all the leverage. He knew it. He knew Taylor wasn't committed to putting together a championship roster. He knew Wiggins and Towns were not ready to be core championship pieces. And I do think there's a difference between those two guys and Simmons and Embiid in terms of their readiness.
I think agree.
Simmons and Embiid are much more ready. But you cannot excuse his behavior because of that. That's not how the NBA works. He was way outside the bounds.
I'm just saying that it's unfair to strip context from all of this and act like Jimmy just kind of lost his mind. I mean, he's operating within an NBA context where he has not had very much leverage over his future for the last 5 or 6 years. And he went to Tom Thibodeau after the Wolves season last year and said, I'm not going to re-sign. And it became clear that he wasn't going to get the contract he wanted in Minnesota. And he tried to sort of speed this process along. And Tibbs apparently, and this is where it gets tricky because it's hard to know what reporting to trust, but it certainly sounds like Thibodeau knew that Jimmy Butler was not invested in the future for about 2 or 3 months before Glenn Taylor did and before the whole world did. And so there was definitely
some denial there. But let me ask you, now that he has this leverage, now that he made his big power play, if you want to call it that, how did he do? Like, his landing spot is Philly with Simmons and Embiid and not a ton else and some, you know, rotation holes and big expectations and Markel Fultz hanging out in the corner of the locker room hoping nobody calls his name or ever tries to involve him in any sort of a conflict. How did Jimmy Butler's power play work out for Jimmy Butler?
I think for Jimmy, this is a win. I really do. I think that Philly, for whatever reason, we don't talk about Philly as a big market, but it is. I mean, and his imprint will be bigger in Philly than it would have been had he gone to somewhere like Houston. Granted, Houston is kind of home for Jimmy, but this is a win. And he's on a team that has the talent to contend for a title. A lot of the talent is going to depend on Ben Simmons. It's funny. So many different people have talked about this trade and said, well, Philly has 3 top 20 NBA players now. Like, Ben Simmons, we haven't talked about it much just because Fultz has been such a disaster, but Simmons has not been a top 20 guy through the first month of basketball, and you can blame that on Fultz, but his game has regressed from where he was this time last March, and he's not even attempting to shoot outside the lane, and so, like, there are real issues to be concerned about with Simmons. But in general, I think there's at least an opportunity to go make a conference finals run, challenge for the finals, and that is better than what Jimmy was going to be getting in Minnesota.
It's definitely a better market. It's definitely a better franchise, better front office. I would say better coach. I would say better star players with him. Mm-hmm. But I also think, like, his setup there, we already saw Towns pull the, like, me or him, right? Like, one of us is basically going to have to go. Essentially, that's what happened in terms of the contract negotiation, right? I mean, it kind of boiled down to that. Shouldn't Simmons just have the same playbook next summer? Like, if they're going to max out Jimmy, give him all this money, and now there's going to be this fight for whose show is it? If I'm Simmons, that's not what you signed up for. I mean, Simmons views himself as a number one overall player, a franchise level guy, the next LeBron. He doesn't view himself as the number three guy on a team that hasn't really made a deep playoff run yet, right? And neither does Jimmy, by the way. Jimmy's whole thing, his list of teams he wanted to go to, all were going to make him the man, right? He's not the man in Philly. He's going to be the third most popular guy on that Philly team. And if it doesn't work, he's going to take a lot of the blame because we know the Sixers fans aren't going to say a single negative thing about Embiid. And we know they're going to protect Ben way before they protect Jimmy, no question about it, right? So how is he going to react to that? I'd be curious as well. I'm also not totally
certain. In general, I have a question for you, though. Do you think it made sense for the Sixers to make this move and like, at least roll the dice and see what they can get?
It did feel like they overpaid a little bit. I mean, if I was Minnesota, I would have much rather had Covington and Saric compared to just Richardson or the 4 mystery first-round picks that were going to come 30 years from now. So I think Minnesota actually did okay in terms of the return package.
I was impressed and surprised by how well they did.
Yeah, so that's a bad sign to me. Like, if we're giving Minnesota credit for making a pretty good deal, that means Philly may, maybe risked a little bit too much. I guess I don't necessarily view Jimmy as a for sure long-term piece there in Philly. I think he's got so much to prove in terms of getting along well with others and trying to make it work on the court, let alone like winning, period, right? Like, he has not done a lot of winning in the postseason in his career. Plus, there's going to be teams out there that will be pitching him, "You can be the number one guy for us. Don't worry about trying to fit with Simmons or trying to, you know, tap dance around Embiid in terms of offensive role. Just like, come and be the guy here. We'll build it around you." And I think that argument is going to be very, very persuasive to him. Perhaps even more persuasive than like, "Hey, come to Philly and sacrifice a little bit and you might be able to play for a title." So from that standpoint, I think there's real risk in terms of whether they're going to be able to keep him long term. And if they don't, this is going to wind up looking really, really bad. But it's a decent shot. I mean, why not? I just don't think the ceiling for this group is that high, personally.
I agree with you there. I also think that this was sort of the only play left for the Sixers after striking out last summer, coming into this next offseason, knowing that it was unlikely that someone like Klay Thompson would leave. It was unlikely that they would even have a shot at someone like Chris Middleton. Kawhi is probably out the door at this point and either going to LA or staying in Toronto. And so I actually commend the Sixers for taking a clear-eyed look at what was possible going forward. And it's funny because we've been getting like bombarded with emails from Sixers fans trying to throw these shitty Bradley Beal trades at me. And like, look, I don't want Dario Saric and Jared Bayless and Markel Fultz for Bradley Beal, okay? And I think that's telling in that getting a perfect third piece next to Embiid and Simmons just wasn't going to happen because the trade assets they had were not good enough to win the Bradley Beal sweepstakes or the Anthony Davis sweepstakes or like literally like any star who hits the market that more teams would want, the Sixers were going to lose. And so in that respect, going after Jimmy Butler isn't the craziest move in the world simply because there were really not many alternatives for Philly.
It's not crazy. That doesn't mean that
it doesn't mean it's gonna work.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know, I mean, I'm hesitant. Are you less hesitant than I am? Like, would you say they're gonna make the Eastern Conference Finals? Like, gun to your head, do they do it?
Gun to my head, no. And oof. And that's because
see,
I don't believe in Simmons, and part of it is Simmons. This could work if Simmons reframed what he wants to be and what he brings to the table for this Sixers team, because
that's,
I think
that's not going to happen though. Come on.
I know it's not. Yeah. And that's why I would bet against the Sixers. However, there's a version of this where he embraces his role as like a Draymond Green type and doesn't concern himself with trying to be like JV Giannis. And that if he's setting screens for Jimmy Butler and letting Jimmy initiate the offense, like there's a version of that blueprint that I can actually get behind and can see working out. And it's also hard to judge right now because the Sixers are going to pick up one or two more rotation pieces along the way. And they should be in good shape. Like they're going to go into a Celtics series and have a shot, which was not true a week ago. Let me put it
this way though. If I'm a rival GM, I'm blowing up Blue Bubble Gang. I'm blowing up Elton Brand. I'm saying, "Elton, phenomenal trade. You got yourself a four-time All-Star for a couple of role players. Congratulations. Way to have like a huge splash right out the gate. You hardly ever get to do that as a GM, you know. Go ahead and celebrate that with a nice bottle of champagne tonight. Hey, by the way, I know this will sound funny now, but if you ever start to think about trading Simmons, let me be your first call, right? Let me put together the offer and get this done cleanly, because, you know, that'd be a real ugly thing. You wouldn't want that to drag out for months. So if you ever need just a quick and tidy Ben Simmons trade, call me first. That's what I'd be doing if I was a rival GM.
Yeah, and we should clarify that Simmons, or at least I should clarify, Simmons could work on his own team. But the problem, even a week ago in Philly, was that Simmons and Embiid haven't really fit together on the court this year, and they didn't fit if you looked closely last year. And that's just going to be a problem that's there all along. And now you bring in Jimmy Butler, another guy who doesn't necessarily fit next to Simmons, but could fit with Embiid. And that's the only reason we're talking about this. It's not because I'm down on Simmons, but it's a real thing.
Here's another thought just from the Philly side of this. I mean, why not just dump Fultz from the rotation, try to get back to what you were doing last year, see how well that works for you before pulling the trigger on a Jimmy Butler deal? Was this offer not going to be available a month from now? Like, if I'm Thibodeau, I'm racing to take that offer. I mean, Jimmy's complaining about his minutes to Sam Amick of The Athletic. I mean, he's scorching earth every direction, and lots of other teams were never involved. Like, what is the bidding war for Jimmy Butler looking like at this point? Wouldn't you have been able to get him for a cheaper price in the future? I kind of wonder if that would have been possible. And then also, you know, I don't still think that they played all the cards that they had before making what is obviously a radical and, you know, core-shaking type trade by losing guys like Covington and Saric. I mean, I would have, you know, basically given up on Fultz first, tried that. If that didn't work, then I would have done this, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that option was really viable for them. And the Dario thing...
it should be.
Here's the issue, though. The Wolves just went on a five-game road trip to the Western Conference. They were 0-5 out there, and they were miserable, like openly miserable throughout the trip. And I think that was just a tipping point where everyone around the team decided to take the wheel from Tom Thibodeau and say, look, you need to trade him. This is happening now. And there were other offers out there. Like, I know Washington offered Otto Porter, and the Wolves came back and said, give us Beal. And so that deal went nowhere. But then there was also, let me see.
You dodged a bullet on that one, man.
Why?
I don't know. I just...
yes.
Because he's not going to re-sign with you, so you just lost Otto for 6 months of a team that's going to be an eight seed. I mean, come on.
The only way the current version of the Wizards could get more miserable would be bringing in Jimmy Butler for a six-month power struggle with John Wall, who's currently drunk and in a hot tub.
I can think of another way. His name is Carmelo Anthony. I'm sure we're going to talk about him in a few minutes.
But. You know Melo's my guy. I'd rather just go down with Melo. I'm cool with that.
See the wheels turning in your head. You're like, wow, if we could always have one of Melo and Markieff Morris on the court for all 48 minutes, that sounds like a title team. What a rotation.
We really could. We could give up 150 points a game, make history. The Rockets were prepared to offer Eric Gordon, Nene, two firsts. The Pelicans were prepared to offer Nikola Mirotic.
So how come these deals don't get done, Andrew? Come on, man. Like,
these
deals
is, like,
all sound
Sixers...
amazing. Do you really believe that those deals were out there and available? And if so, why did it take this long for them to pull the trigger on a deal that was good but not great if there's supposedly all these teams in the mix? Come on.
I believe that part of that comes back to Thibodeau and who was making the call. My only point is that Sixers couldn't just kind of wait this out and see what happens and try to revisit things a month from now. The one thing, Philly has got to be regretting the Mikal Bridges trade on draft night, because, man, it would be nice to have another young wing to throw into the mix now. I mean, it made sense to trade Saric because he wasn't going to make sense long term, and it wouldn't have been smart for them to pay him when he's up for a contract extension in I believe the year after this. And so his value was going to be diminishing pretty hard, and even if they had waited till this summer. So it's a win in that respect.
Big picture question along those lines for you. I mean, are Brian Colangelo's burner accounts going to basically have ruined this franchise? I mean, is it possible that we look at that moment where they just lose the front office stability and direction, or like the experience, and then all of a sudden they start making weird trades that like offends Bridges' mom, you know, and like they go and make this like huge swing for the fences deal for Jimmy Butler. You know, they start putting Fultz into like, you know, charity case minutes and starter's role. I mean, they've been doing a lot of weird things here over the last 5 or 6 months that I'm not totally certain would have happened had they just had an experienced sort of, you know, by the book type executive, whether that's Colangelo or somebody else. I mean, is that going to wind up being a turning point moment for this franchise where we look back and say, like, yeah, it seemed weird at the time and just kind of funny and goofy, but it was actually much more than a joke. It was kind of the beginning of the crumbling, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess so. I don't The Bridges trade on draft night was defensible too. I think the problem there is that Philly assumed that the Heat pick in 2021 was going to have more value than it actually does. Here's what I would say, actually. The moment that we would look back on as the real tipping point where things started to go bad would be the Fultz trade and the week of ecstatic celebrations and told you so's from Sixers fans. And that, even had we had this conversation a week ago, I would have said, oh man, I don't know if they're ever going to overcome that mistake and the way things played out from there, which again wasn't totally their fault. Nobody had any idea that Markelle Fultz was going to get to the NBA and forget how to shoot a jump shot. But having said all that, now I'm not so sure, you know? Now, there's at least a version of the Sixers' future that gets a lot more interesting, because if Jimmy Butler can show up and help this team close games and help the offense make a little bit more sense over the final quarters of games and be a bridge between Simmons and Embiid, it's not inconceivable that this does work and then things get interesting. Or they could trade Ben Simmons next summer and bring back more pieces that can help it work. So I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, one thing about Fultz, you know how draft prospects, they'll get steered away from certain markets. You always hear the agent didn't want him to go to Sacramento, so he didn't give the medical info, or he wouldn't have him work out with them or whatever else. If you were Fultz's people, let's say, you know, right now Fultz is exactly who he was coming into the pre-draft process, right? Wouldn't you look at this Sixers roster and that would be a team you would steer him away from? Under no circumstances would you want him to go to a place with three high usage star level guys who need to have the ball, and there's not really a clear role for him, you know, in terms of how he fits in. You would rather him go to a backwater like Phoenix than play for a team like Philadelphia. So my point here is, Fultz is not even that same guy, right? He's clearly a guy with significant confidence issues, the yips, whatever else you want to call it. You just cannot rely on this guy. He still loafs too much for my personal liking. But now you throw him into this mix, aren't you kind of kissing away his next year of development by bringing in Jimmy Butler? Didn't you pretty much give up on Fultz by making this move, at least in the short term?
Dude, I feel bad for – I do genuinely feel bad for Fultz, number one. I also feel like we've all started talking about Jimmy Butler like he's Hannibal Lecter and is going to kill any player under 24 years old.
Not even from a personality standpoint. I'm just saying strictly basketball and usage, right? I'm not saying Fultz is going to have to hide out and come early and stay late so he doesn't run into Jimmy Butler randomly in the locker room. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying who gets the ball, who has the touches, who gets to be the man. And Fultz is just getting marginalized and marginalized and marginalized. And I think that's a really, really tough spot. If I was his people, frankly, I would be pushing for a trade too. I would just say, look, let's get a fresh start. It's not working out in Philly. Clearly, he is not that number three guy that he was pitched on when they moved up to trade for him. And I understand that's really hard because who's going to offer anything for Fultz right now? But to me, it's already time for a change of scenery for him.
Yeah, well, I do. I mean, that's another one where whether they got Jimmy Butler or not, it seemed like it was time for both sides to move on. And Fultz is just better on the ball, and that wasn't going to happen playing next to Ben Simmons. And so his only shot at NBA success is going somewhere where he's the only guy on the court who can't shoot. And unfortunately, Philly already has a superstar guard who refuses to shoot. So one more note here. Luke sent us updated league pass rankings. Number one, the Philadelphia 76ers and or the life of Jimmy part three. Number two, everybody else.
And, I disagree. I really disagree. Do you agree?
Really? First of all, I am including that simply as a note to end on with this segment, because we should move on and talk about the rest of the East. But in general, my official take here is that all of this depends on Ben Simmons. The smart money is that it will not work. And yet, I was not looking forward to watching this Sixers team for the next 6 months. And if we'd had this conversation a week ago, it would have been pretty dark. And now there's at least hope, and there's some of this shit is going to be fascinating. So I am excited to see where it leads.
I guess. I mean, the only way it's really fun to watch is if Jimmy, you know, seamlessly fits in. He's playing with just max effort, and he's back to being like an MVP type candidate. And if that's what happens, I will be watching that disgusted that this is what it took for him to play how he should be playing.
Why?
Right?
God, come.
Because.
Listen.
Player tanking,
accountability.
Player tanking is an epidemic, Andrew, and you're just going around handing out passes to all these guys regardless of how they're going to play. It doesn't even matter. Just go play for a team where you actually want to play. You know,
here's
don't
the thing, though.
Live up
again,
to what your obligations are
back.
To an organization. I mean, you're just ready to just forgive and forget everything, and I'm not.
No, here's the issue. To circle back to where we were 20 minutes ago, Jimmy Butler had no better options. He had no leverage but to be a stubborn dickhead. And granted, Jimmy Butler in a vacuum is just a flat-out psychopath, and that's why he's great, and
hey,
that's
here's
why
an
he's
option.
Entertaining.
Here's an option. Call what? Glenn Taylor the day after your season ends in the first round against Houston. Call him directly. I promise you can get through to him. You're Jimmy Butler. Demand the trade. Cut Thibodeau out. Don't wait the whole summer. Oh, maybe Thibodeau's just sitting on the memo and hasn't informed his bosses. Go straight to Taylor and say, I hate Minnesota. I hate you. I want out. You'll get traded. That would have happened. Okay. I promise you that.
I'm just saying disgust is laying it on a little bit thick, but
no,
it's your
not.
Brand. So
no, it's really not. But I also think you know, they're going to be working through things, and the fascinating part will be who sacrifices. And I'm definitely interested in watching that, but that doesn't make them the most interesting or entertaining team in the league. I'll take LA. I'll take even Toronto, Milwaukee. You know, yeah. I take five teams before I take Philly at this point.
It's a good point. The Lakers have turned every game into a one-point game buzzer-beater situation, so it is very difficult to unseat LA at this point. All right, let's keep it moving. But first, Ben. Today's episode is brought to you by Robinhood. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, options, cryptos, all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just rich people. It's a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest with true confidence. Simple and intuitive. It's got a clear design with data presented in an easy-to-digest way. Ben, tell me about Robinhood and your experience.
The nice thing with Robinhood is it's mobile focused, right? You download the app, you input your personal information, boom, you're ready to rock and roll on the stock market. There's a couple of nice little features about the Robinhood app. First of all, no commission fees, right? Other brokerages will charge you up to $10 for every trade. They're just skimming off the top, Andrew. You don't want that. Robinhood doesn't charge commission fees. You get to keep all of your profits. The other thing too, they've got this really interesting search feature where you can see like the most popular stocks out there. You can see certain sectors like say entertainment or social media. So if you have passion projects where you want to be investing money in things that you care about, you can use their app sorting function to find those exact topics. And they've also got a lot of resources to just teach you how to invest your money wisely and, you know, to just basically get it done straight out of the box. You don't need to call some guy and talk, hey, give me tips for 45 minutes. No, Robinhood's got it all.
There you go. Robinhood is giving our listeners a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help build your portfolio. Sign up now at floor.robinhood.com. That's floor.robinhood.com. You could get an Apple stock and get down with the hashtag Blue Bubble Gang. Go get into it.
Floor.robinhood.com. That's floor.robinhood.com.
All right, let's get back to it. Joe says, hot but also possibly correct take. The East playoff field is better than the West playoff field. What
Come
do you think,
on.
Ben?
What do you think? How do I feel? Andrew, we try to do this every year. You're always trying to wiggle these questions in. Oh, the AAA isn't actually AAA anymore. Andrew, the show is the show. The East is not. I think there's probably four teams that matter in the East, and there's 12 teams that matter in the West, right? So come on. Let's not be silly.
Look, you're not wrong. I've been pushing this agenda for the better part of my adult life. However,
you've been wrong every year.
The East is not as bad as you think. And if you're looking for legitimate, like, great teams, the East has more contenders than the West. The West has 12 good teams, none of whom are great outside of Golden State.
The East has zero great teams right now. Who's great
in
the East?
Okay, no one is great compared to the Warriors.
Okay, so there
I'm
you
saying,
go.
If we're separating things into tiers, there's one team that's going to win the title. There's five teams that are at least good enough to make things interesting against them, and four of those teams are now in the East. I would say Utah can make things interesting against Golden State, and then beyond that, it's Milwaukee, Boston, Toronto, and Philly. All of those teams are more interesting than anything we're getting out West.
If any of these teams in the Eastern Conference, besides Toronto, had to play a Western Conference schedule, they wouldn't be having home court in the West, okay? So these are all five seeds and below.
That is such a bad hot take. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I have 20 years of evidence suggesting that's true, and we're watching LeBron James with a better team than he had last year in Cleveland just inching into the eighth seed in the Western Conference. Come on, Andrew.
Wow. Better team. I mean, you're giving some of those Lakers a lot of credit there.
Well, I'm not giving Brandon Ingram, your nephew, any credit. Six turnovers last night. Sloppy. Ball going all over the place. His numbers are down from last season. You promised me he'd be a top 50 player, and yet he's still better than any other wing player that Cleveland had last year.
Let me ask you something. Are you worried at all about Ingram? Because I don't know if I am.
No,
I'm
you're
still
worried
believer.
About Ingram because you thought no. he's incredible, and he's not. He's playing exactly like I told you he was going to play, but you're just slowly realizing that all of your dreams for him may not be taking place overnight.
No, I think the issue is that he's better on the ball, and he's been relegated to the role of LeBron's supporting player, and that his game is not particularly well-suited to that role. And so I do, watching some of these Lakers games, I start thinking, like, you know, maybe Brandon Ingram is destined to play somewhere else. It certainly seems that's where we're headed anyways, just because of what LeBron's going to need and want. But yeah, the fit hasn't been as clean as I had hoped, and I probably should have thought it through a little bit more this summer before I started promising Brandon Ingram all-star appearances. But he's just not well-suited to playing off the ball next to LeBron.
That almost sounded like a concession, so I'll take it. Getting back to your point, though, about the tiers. So tell me who you have in this tier of, like, very good teams that you think are better than basically anybody in the West besides Golden State. So you're saying it's Toronto, Milwaukee, Philly, and Boston? Is that your four, or how are you doing it?
Yes, and I honestly can't tell whether this is a bit from you. Are you saying you trust the Nuggets more than the Raptors in a series against the Golden State Warriors?
I think the Nuggets would reach the Eastern Conference Finals if they were in the East, and I think
it would be
a knockdown drag out between them and Toronto.
Oh my God. You think the Nuggets are better than the Celtics?
Have you watched the Celtics in the last month? If we're talking about right now, Andrew, Boston's nothing special. They're taking L's left and right. Didn't they just come through a big road trip and throughout the Western Conference and just get tattooed by every single team they played?
Yeah, well, the Celtics are a different conversation. We had that on the list here.
I hope so, because didn't you promise they were going over like 64 wins this year? What happened there?
Well, it's not working out. I also came on the podcast and said it's going to take them 20 games to adjust, just like it did with the Miami Heat in 2010. So I wasn't wrong. Barack asked, what are the odds the Celtics end up like the Coach Bud Hawks? Always a bridesmaid and never a bride. That, by the way, is the meanest thing you can say about any team going forward. The Coach Bud Hawks...
That's your favorite diss. So hold on. If you're out on the Celtics, you're out on the Wizards, whose bandwagon are you hopping on for the Eastern Conference? I mean, your choices, you're running out of options here.
Well, my SI cover jinx of the Celtics has been wildly successful thus far, so I'm proud of the way things have worked out. The real big question with Boston is what happens to Gordon Hayward, because he just does not look right at all right now. And I think that's part of the issue when talking about this team is, like, on the one hand, they absolutely deserve the benefit of the doubt because they've got so much talent, and it's going to take a while for things to kind of come together and fall into place for them. And they also have the best coach in the league in Brad Stevens. And so it should all work. But I think one of the variables is Hayward, because if Hayward's going to be this shell of himself all year, then the Celtics actually don't have as much talent as we all thought they would. And then they do kind of come down a couple pegs in the East. I still would take them in a series against the Denver Nuggets. But yeah, there's real questions to ask if Hayward is not going to be anything close to what we expected.
No, I appreciate you protecting Kyrie Irving's reputation here. I mean, are you going to go at the guy who maybe has been a little bit disappointing this season? Or are you just going to blame Hayward? Is Hayward your new Melo, like your Boston Melo, basically?
Here's the thing. Kyrie has been fantastic for the last 2 or 3 weeks, and he started slow. I think it was the beard. I don't really know what happened. I know that Tommy Heinsohn called him fat along the way, and there was sort of some internal strife with the Sons of Danny Ainge, but the Kyrie is not the problem. I think the problem could be that Hayward hasn't been quite the facilitator they were hoping for. Nobody's hitting shots. The Celtics are getting a ton of open looks, but nobody's hitting shots. And I think part of that, Sam Esfandiari, friend of the podcast, pointed out, I saw on Twitter at some point last week, he was talking about the Celtics are getting open looks, but none of their guys are in rhythm. And I think that's a problem. And that comes back to having too many mouths to feed. And Kyrie is a great scorer, but not a great facilitator.
There you go. Finally, you come around to it. Come on.
They need to come up with a better plan than asking Kyrie to balance those two roles. And I thought that Hayward was going to be kind of the guy who helped solve that problem, and he hasn't been.
That's what I was hoping. You'd start holding him accountable for their overall offense and the structure and the flow. I mean, their offense right now is 22nd in the league. They're behind Oklahoma City. And I know you've gotten in, you know, on the party with me in terms of, you know, cracking on Westbrook and how does he make his teammates better and so forth. I mean, Boston's offense is worse than Oklahoma City's right now. And there is no question there's more offensive talent around the point guard in Boston than there is in Oklahoma City. Does that not reflect very obviously on Kyrie's limitations here as a main guy, as the driver of, you know, what should be a top five, top six offense in the league? I mean, how can it not?
I mean, it does, but I think that's kind of beside the point. Nobody was saying that he was the guy who could be your LeBron. He's a specialist.
Well, he was.
He's a scorer. I mean,
he was. He pushed his way out because he wanted to be the leader of his own team. So now you're the leader, Kyrie. Pull the best out of your teammates. Let's see what you can do.
No, Kyrie's a guy you bring in to help win playoff games and win the fourth quarter in game six on the road. And he can do that. And
but so, is that how he sees himself, though? That's what I'm saying. Didn't he want to be the man?
I think he sees himself as a leader who's going to take care of his younger teammates, and his whole life is a subtweet to LeBron, if you look closely at some of this stuff. But you know, you can't change the way you play best, and the best version of Kyrie is Kyrie as a killer who's out there taking 25 shots a game and trying to take the other team's heart. And so
the best version of Kyrie is going out in round one if they can't figure things out on offense.
I guess so. I mean, here's the thing. My point with the Celtics in general is that if you try to turn Kyrie into a 17-10 guy who gets everybody involved, you're going to be disappointed with the way he facilitates and disappointed by his scoring. So the solution is not asking Kyrie to become Chris Paul. I think that they can find a better happy medium. But right now, none of the guys are in rhythm. And it's going to be interesting to see how they address it. I still am not that worried about Boston, but I think we're hitting a point now, particularly with Hayward, where it's like if things don't start to change soon, we got to stop giving this team the benefit of doubt and penciling them into the conference finals.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not worried yet, but you know, I'm not panicking, but I'm definitely kind of taking notes on Kyrie, right? Because when he came to Boston, that was a huge question. Like, how good can he be in sort of that lead role? How good can his team offense be? And I don't know. I mean, it doesn't look good. I think it reflects on him. And, you know, when I look forward in terms of like who their potential matchups are, like I feel like Toronto has worked through a lot of these problems already, you know, like they kind of hit the ground running. I expected some of the same issues that you were afraid of for Boston early in the season to kind of strike the Raptors. They really haven't. And so their defense hasn't carried them, you know, record wise, as much as I expected it to. I thought I would be able to kind of like look past some of the offensive issues early because the defense would be so locked in and solid. But that hasn't worked. Sometimes, you know, some of that's their fault, probably. Some of it is just style of play in terms of how offense has been so dominant here early this season. But, you know, they don't look like a contender right now. I don't think that's, you know, going out on a limb. And I guess I'd say I'm disappointed, not worried, but just kind of disappointed because I thought this was going to be a team that was, you know, by at least by this point of the season, knowing exactly who they were, having the pecking order stuff, you know, figured out. And if not, at least getting A plus Kyrie. And I still don't think we're seeing that.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting A plus Kyrie as a scorer. I think you need to watch more Celtics games if you don't think we're getting A plus Kyrie.
I mean, he's averaging 21 points a game. Like he had 39 the other night against you know, some garbage team called the Phoenix Suns. I mean, I don't think he's been this dominant. Like when we think of like elite scorers, you know, at the point guard position, he should be going over 40 plus. If it's like the whole thing is built around him in this day and age, I mean, he hasn't been that great.
Okay, well,
he's had two. I'm looking at his game log right now. He's had 3 30-point games the whole season.
Yeah, he's been very good, though. He's hitting from the outside. Kyrie is not the problem. Tatum has been more of a problem, and part of that is him figuring out what his role is going to be and what the best version of his game is. And I think another issue is that the best version of his game is probably not the best version of Tatum for this Celtics team and what they want to do. And so there's a lot to figure out, and we kind of knew that was going to happen, and we just assumed that it would all fall into place, and it hasn't so far.
Yeah, well, look, if all the wings are struggling, if it's Hayward, if it's Tatum, all these other guys you want to blame, and the offense as a whole is struggling, that points to one guy, the point guard.
Dude, you can't blame Kyrie for Hayward looking like a shell of himself who's never going to be the same player. You can't do that.
I can blame them for having a below average offense with one of the best collection of talents in the league. I definitely can do that.
Okay. Well, we'll check back in with the Celtics soon. Tell me about the Lakers. Ralph says, I know it's early, but the Lakers are 3-0 with Tyson Chandler in the lineup. What are your impressions so far? Is it sustainable for LA?
Well. I think they're also 3-0 since you said they'd miss the playoffs. Is that true too?
Might be. I don't know.
You guaranteed they'd miss the playoffs last week, and they haven't lost set, and they probably won't lose again.
Can I tell you something? When I watch LeBron James go to the wire with the Atlanta Hawks, that doesn't make me feel worse about predicting the Lakers were going to miss the playoffs. But continue.
No, they were up by 15, and they just, you know, lost.
They Lakers
edge.
Did.
Yeah, they did.
That's their brand.
But here's what I'd say. The Tyson Chandler version of the Lakers are better, but they're also less entertaining because they do have real structure. And part of the beauty of the early season Lakers was just the complete chaos and, like, the going full Lakers, you know, like getting down 20, making a 20-point comeback, you know, every
you know
single
what?
Possession's an adventure. And, like,
no,
they're,
no BS. It's an experience I'll never forget. I can't imagine what it was like watching that in person, but I just remember the first 2 weeks of the season watching every single Lakers game just in shock. I can't believe that that was their plan and that Jonathan Williams was like the savior for a week there.
Oh, yeah.
All of it
that
was incredible.
Great. Yeah, you're going to be telling your grandkids about Kyle Kuzma at center. I mean, that's going to be it's going to be a great chapter of your life story. But they're much more stable and a little bit less entertaining. Chandler's been a nice fit. I mean, he definitely seems like he's having a bounce back energy wise from the Phoenix days. Surprise, surprise there. And I think LeBron is just really coasting. I mean, that's the real takeaway to me. And he's got to be just loving life. I mean, they're above 500 as we're taping this. I think they're in the West 8th seed. I mean, to survive what they did early on, to have two, you know, somewhat dependable centers who fit cleanly and allow you to kind of play the same style at all times is just really going to allow LeBron to just coast that much harder and that much longer. It's not like he's playing bad, but LeBron is his effort level is like in the 60 percentile range right now.
Yeah.
I do think one of the most interesting things though of like subplots is how terrible he's been at the free throw line. And everybody was making those jokes. So like, oh, Mamba, like, you know, Kobe would have been able to like make free throws late in games, even with a torn Achilles. Like LeBron, is that been three or four different games that he's nearly botched from the free throw line, and he's really avoided, like against Atlanta, he saved himself by having to put back dunk to kind of win the game, right? But yeah. Imagine the storm that would have rained down there. It was the same thing in a game against Dallas. We can go back to some other earlier games where he's just like very narrowly avoided just being completely torched by everyone for his terrible free throw shooting. And it does seem like it's in his head. You know, I ran these numbers. He's shooting like basically in the 70s across the first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, and fourth quarter. But when he's shooting clutch free throws in the last 5 minutes, he's under 60%. Clutch free throws in the last minute, he's at 44%. And clutch free throws in the last 30 seconds this season, he's at 38%. So there's something going on there. And is it the shadow of Kobe? Like, is it actually getting to him? Is he just overthinking? New digs, new building? I mean, how do we explain it? Because it doesn't seem like it's random. Because when he goes to the line late in games, Staples Center is not anticipating makes. They are like on the edge of their seat expecting him to miss.
Yeah, well, I mean, for people who have paid close attention to LeBron, he's always been a little bit sketchy in those situations as a free throw shooter. And that's not to question his clutch gene or whatever, but this has been a thing with him for a while, and it has become exacerbated this year in LA. And as a impartial observer, I kind of just love it because it adds a dose of insanity to the way everybody's going to talk about this.
Totally.
It's definitely something to watch, though, because, you know, look, LeBron is probably the smartest basketball player we've had in the last 25 years. So, you know, it's certainly something that he has noticed and is well aware of like his history, and that he's probably 15 or 20% worse than he normally is in those situations. And like, he knows every detail.
Yeah. I mean, past that, I think that their mood overall as a team is definitely improved. I mean, they kind of come as LeBron comes and, you know, go as LeBron goes. And LeBron's very happy to have Tyson Chandler. So I think that has kind of spread out across the locker room. They do seem like they're building some real camaraderie in terms of, you know, the locker room atmosphere. They were pretty joyous. I mean, on one end, it was kind of sad how happy they were about beating the Hawks. I mean, you're kind of like sneering at that win. But look, like a 3-game winning streak, like not being below 500, you know, shaking off some of those early questions, dodging the Luke Walton rumors from a week ago. Like, maybe it's a minor victory, but I do feel like this is like a legit victory for them, you know?
Who are the other teams they beat? I know it was the Wolves, the Hawks. Like
Sacramento, I think.
Yeah, Sacramento. There we go. So minor victories across the board there, but it is progress. You know what makes me sad? We never got to record a podcast during those 24 to 48 hours where it looked like the Lakers were going to fire Luke Walton, and the names being floated as replacements were Mark Jackson and Jason Kidd. I think that was probably the peak of the year for Lakers haters, because it's going to start to level out here, and we'll probably never approach Lakers hire Jason Kidd territory, but it was fun while it lasted.
No, I mean, those rumors were designed to make my brain explode, because, you know, I'm a Luke guy. I've been defending Luke, and the idea that I was going to have to listen to Mark Jackson or Jason Kidd for like 75 press conferences the rest of this year was just making my skin, skin crawl and my blood boil.
Well, it's so hard too, because you've got, you know, when you look at Lakers fans, there's like the vast majority of them are just all in on LeBron and ready to curse out anyone who doubts this team. But then there's also a smaller percentage who are actually pretty smart basketball fans, and who also, like, they are in on LeBron, but they let's say they've got like 1 foot in right now, and they're trying to believe, but they deep in their heart, they know that some of this stuff is not great, and they've seen some of the defense already, and you know, there are misgivings among these smart Lakers fans. And so for that weekend where it looked like it was going to be Jason Kidd, like, I can't even imagine how some of those guys felt.
And there should be misgivings, by the way, because his defensive effort has been really, really rough. And like, he really did remind me of Kobe last night. He was just like randomly doubling on Trae Young, and all of his teammates were like, wait, what's happening here? And like, LeBron just seemed like he was just going to swallow Trae Young up. Like, he had just made up in his mind that like, if he pressured Trae, he was going to turn the ball over. And yeah. So he was freelancing in ways that didn't seem like anybody else was expecting. And of course, there was that clip going around of him just like kicking his leg out randomly at the pass. I think it was in Sacramento, and you know, not really rotating hard. I mean, like I said, like he's on like third gear coasting, and but I think you have to learn how to play with someone like that, you know. And I think that the Lakers are really starting to figure out how to do that. It's like, if you cover for him on defense and then you cut hard on offense, he is going to hit you with laser passes that nobody else can make, and you're going to get free layups or wide open three-pointers. I mean, he loves targeting Kuzma, who actually hasn't shot the ball that well yet. Yeah. And he's got some other favorite targets, you know, in terms of the lobs inside and everything else. So I do think there's an adjustment period taking place with his teammates in terms of like learning where LeBron can be so special that no one else can match what he does. And then when LeBron is going to be like the lowest energy guy on the court, and there's, you know, equal doses of that going on right now.
The Kuzma thing, it's funny. This is one of the reasons I did sort of an audio double take when you said that LeBron's Lakers are that much better than LeBron's Cavs were last year. I don't know if Kuzma is actually a good player. He seems to me like, I watch him and I'm like, yeah, it's a good sixth or seventh man, and who should not play more than 20 to 25 minutes. And the Lakers rely on him a lot, and I wonder how long that's going to last.
Well, you're very welcome for leaving him off the top 100 this year. You know, I think we nailed that one. We got a lot of pressure from the local Lakers media, and of course Magic Johnson took his shots.
You know, did he really?
A little bit at the preseason press conference, saying how Kuzma was motivated by the snub. But look, guys like Magic Johnson and Mike D'Antoni, they want to question this top 100 process. But you know, look who's laughing now. We were right about Kuzma. We were right about PJ Tucker. It's just, you know, hold your tongue, guys. Watch out.
Okay.
Now.
Good. Well, shifting back to LeBron's defense for one second, and which will be a nice little segue. The best Instagram DM I've gotten all year. My DMs are closed, but I saw this. Somebody threw a take in and said, hot take, LeBron's defense is actually every bit as bad as Carmelo's, and we just don't talk about it.
No, and not that hard. Come
I on. Think that's overstating it, but it's a good take. I appreciated it. And so let's talk Melo at the
end. That is not a
here.
Good take. That's idiotic. Come on.
Adam says, how do you think Carmelo will fit into the Shanghai Sharks rotation around Jimmer Fredette and Gershon Yabusele?
They might have to lower his expectations there. I mean, maybe Guangdong, you know, maybe.
Iwu, yeah, I don't know. The Shanghai is set. And then Jake said, should Golden State make Melo their latest pet project? Why can't they get his first ring? Why can't they help him get his first ring playing garbage time and straight chilling on the bench? What do you think, Ben? Where this is, as the world turns with Carmelo, what do you think, Ben?
Well, I just took some shots at some legends in terms of Magic and Mike D'Antoni, and I'm going to take some more shots at legends in terms of Dwayne Wade and LeBron, who are definitely doing right by their buddy Carmelo on Twitter, talking about how you shouldn't scapegoat Carmelo. He's not the real cause of the problems. Let me just say this. Houston cutting Carmelo Anthony loose is not an act of disrespect in any form or fashion, Andrew. That is an act of mercy, okay? It's time to just give up. It is. We've reached that point. He was already done in Oklahoma City. You hung on. Lots of people hung on. I understand that impulse. Look, I still think Mike could play in the NBA right now. I would love to see Allen Iverson make another comeback in Turkey. We can go down the list of these guys. You know, Steve Nash. What if he played for the Warriors? Could he still do it? Like, there's lots of guys who you don't want to – you just cling to the hope that they can still play, right?
Yeah.
It's over. And I appreciate Wade and LeBron for stepping up for their guy to kind of help him through what will be kind of an embarrassing, you know, chapter in his career. The guy just can't play anymore. He can't. It's not, oh, it's a system fit issue. Oh, I need some more time to fit in. He just can't play anymore. And yeah. I think he should just exit stage left. I don't think he should try to find another spot. I think he should just take his money and run, pretend none of this ever happened, pretend the Hawks thing didn't happen, pretend the Houston thing didn't happen. go smoke those cigars, which he loves, go down on the banana boat, just find a nice island for the next 6 months and chill. I think we just need to be done with Carmelo.
I agree with you 100%. And it pains me to say it because, you know, I heard my friend and former Grantland teammate, Chris Ryan, threw out the idea of Carmelo going to the Spurs, which in my heart, I would love to have that happen. Okay, I really would, just to screw with you. However, it's time, man. We came on here a couple weeks ago and I said, I can't watch Carmelo do this to his legacy. Because there are a lot of dumb people who are going to watch this version of Carmelo and conclude that he has always been the most overrated player in NBA history, which just isn't true. But the longer he sticks around and kind of inflicts this version of himself on these various contenders, like, it's just not going to end well for him or the teams he's playing on. And Carmelo has made a ton of money and can go have an awesome life somewhere else. So if he's not going to sign on to be the 12th man in Golden State, I hope that this is kind of the end, because it's time.
I think it's time. There's really no question about it. I don't know if you remember a couple of weeks ago when we had that Carmelo conversation, I jokingly said something along the lines of, like, I wouldn't be surprised if he like retired at halftime, sort of like that NFL player. And, you know, we had our chuckles.
Totally.
If you read a behind the scenes piece by Kelly, I think Iko is his last name, on The Athletic. Apologies if I butchered that. He does nice work, you know, covering the Rockets. He has a little blow-by-blow of Carmelo's like 1-for-11 game and how the aftermath went in the locker room against Oklahoma City. And basically, like, Westbrook comes into the locker room, realizes the Rockets are all like in the pits. He screams for Harden to like come get ready so that they can go hang out after the game. He doesn't even say hi or a word to Carmelo, who's like right there. And then Carmelo walks out of the stadium to the bus without basically talking to or acknowledging anyone on his way out, even though there's people everywhere. So when I was reading that piece, I was like, wow, his life wound up being sadder than retiring at halftime. That is really not something I could have pictured.
Well, and you know what,
I think,
man?
If Carmelo read that, he would know it's time. So just go read that, Carmelo. You know, really get a perspective, an outside perspective of what you're going through, and realize it's time to hang it up. You're a legend. You're a USA basketball legend, a Syracuse legend, not really an NBA legend, but a pretty good player in the NBA. You've had your run. It's time.
Yeah, and I'm not here to shed any tears for Carmelo, who has had an awesome run and has probably made like $250 million over the years. So he's fine. But it has been kind of hard to watch. And I appreciated some of the guys like Dwayne Wade and LeBron James sticking up for him, because he has become the face of a broader decline in Houston. And it's not all on Melo. And I would imagine that that's what is going to become clear over the next month or so in Houston, is like, there are still a lot of problems that they're going to have to solve. But moving on from Melo is a step in the right direction, and a step in the right direction for him too. So on that note,
can you see why I want to talk Giannis for 10 minutes at the top? I mean, this is just so rough.
Look,
I mean, who
we have
picks
to
these
talk
topics?
About the news.
Who picks
we have
these
to talk
questions?
About the news.
I feel like you're over there listening to Elliot Smith to prepare for this podcast for like 2.5 hours. Like, come on, man.
Speaking of who picks these questions, we're going to end on this. Email from Curtis, who says, "Hey guys, hope you're doing well. Was listening to you guys talk about this last second Jamal Murray shot, and I have a couple things I don't get." And then from there, he goes on this long rant criticizing our Kyrie takes. He says, "I'm convinced Ben hates all Canadians, et cetera, et cetera."
Andrew, I'm a quarter Canadian. That's impossible. I'm not exactly a self-hating person, all right? Thank you.
Yes. Well, and then Curtis signs off with, "Go Duke." And I just want to say to any listeners out there, the best way to not get your email read on the podcast is to send us a block of text that's critical of us and then say, "Go Duke" at the end. Don't.
But Andrew, someone just did that and you just read the whole thing on the air.
Well, yes, but I only read it to tell him to fuck off. So it is what it is. But we do love most Canadians. And
well,
with that,
on that note, guys, go ahead and email us. openfloormail@gmail.com. openfloormail@gmail.com. If you're lucky, Andrew might pick your question. And if you're unlucky, Andrew might pick your question and curse you out in front of our loyal global audience.
Yes,
so thanks
our massive global audience. Subscribe, download. We will be back later this week. Ben, take it easy, man. You got to get back to Staples Center.
No question. I get the Warriors tonight. No Steph, though, which is a bummer. But guys, go to Apple Podcasts. Find that Open Floor page by searching for Open Floor. That's two words. Scroll down. It will say rate and review. Tap 5 stars. It's just that easy. We really do appreciate all the positive feedback we've received there. And Andrew, don't forget, man, worldfamousradio.com. We're on there. You can find us there as well as lots of other places to get your podcast. Hey, Andrew, until later this week, I will talk to you.
All right, man. Take it easy.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.